From Sapporo, Japan, this is the Davyshow.org newsletter for October 20th, 2007. I'm Arturo Davyshow, writing to you from Sapporo, Japan. This week's contents. Item 1. New Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare Directive. All companies must check and register their non-Japanese workers. Item 2. Globe and Mail on the Government of Japan's nasty immigration and refugee policies. Item 3. Asahi. Unhygienic food in immigration gaijin tank triggers hunger strike. Item 4. Asahi. Non-Japanese dies during police snitch site home ID check. Item 5. Idebor case update. Denied release. Next hearing in 2 months. Item 6. What to do if you are threatened with eviction. Item 7. Template protest letters, RE, upcoming fingerprint laws, and finally, Item 8, forthcoming articles in Japan Times and Metropolis on reinstating fingerprinting and Japanese government cabinet human rights survey. This is by Arturo Davyshow, Sapporo, Japan. Item number 1. The new Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare Directive. All companies must check and register their non-Japanese workers. I've been getting a lot of questions recently from people being approached by their employers and asked for copies of their gaijin cards. The Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare says, Item 2. From October 1, 2007, all employers are now legally bound to formally submit, by todoke, to the Minister of Health, Labor, and Welfare, Hello Work, a report on all their permanent foreign laborers, confirming their name, status and residence, and duration of visa when they are hired and leave work. Exception to this rule are the special permanent residents, the Zainichis, or the people here on government business or diplomatic visas. Those who do not do so promptly and properly will face fines of no more than 30 man, Sanju man, translation by Arturo Davyshow. There's a link up at my site, of course. Go up and see newsletter October 20th, 2007. Note that this does not require your employer to make or submit photocopies, etc., of your gaijin card and or passport. Employers just have to check to make sure your visa is legit, then report it to the authorities. Suggest that if you don't want things photocopied, well, say so. Comment. I knew that the Japanese government had long proposed taking measures against visa overstayers, and I too agreed that employers who employ illegals should take responsibility, as opposed to the standard practice of punishing the employee by merely deporting them at a moment's notice. But I wish there was a less intrusive way of doing this, and I wish more care had been made to inform non-Japanese workers in advance and explain to them the reasons why. In comparison, the recent fingerprint law amendments were enlightened in their PR, though that's not saying a lot. Here's an article from the Vernacular Press on the possible effects. Title: Regarding the new requirements to report non-Japanese workers to the government, knowledge not made widespread, and dangers of discrimination. This appeared in the Kobe Shimbun, October 1st, 2007. Here's an excerpt translated by Colin Parrott. Thank you very much. Until now, once a year in June, firms employing foreign workers have reported such details as residency status, nationality, and number of foreign workers to the Public Employment Security Office, Hello Work, at their own discretion. According to the Labor Department, some 5,000 employees at 910 firms, with 30 employees or more, in the prefecture have been targeted. Around 500 Vietnamese live in Kobe's Nagata Ward, where most of them work at a local chemical factory. When the Japan Chemical Shoes Industrial Association reported the revisions of the law to its member companies by newsletter, they were met with criticism. Quote, without an investigation into how many people are working where, I really don't see what difference it'll make, said a 42-year-old chemical factory manager. Sure, it's good for decreasing illegal employment, but if we don't first acknowledge the fact that illegal unskilled foreign laborers exist, we're going to be left with a labor shortage. The manager realizes illegal Vietnamese laborers in the area will be exposed, but worries foreigners who lose their jobs will unnecessarily turn to crime. End quote. Furthermore, data gathered by the Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare Ministry plans to be shared with the Ministry of Justice. The Japan Federation of Bar Associations and others criticize this scheme because it, quote, violates foreigners' rights to privacy, end quote, They point out, quote, there is a possibility that discriminatory treatment based on race, skin color, or ethnic origin might arise, end quote. The employment promotion law was established with the goal of advancing blue-collar job stability and to increase the economic and social status in society of women, the elderly, and disabled. From October onwards, it will be prohibited to use age limit restrictions in the recruitment and hiring process. Comment. The good news above is that the age restriction is being abolished, and that's good for Japanese academia, where age caps of 35 for non-Japanese academics are not unusual. At least one job info site now refuses to post ads with age restrictions. More on that in a different newsletter. But note the underlying assumption that foreigners not employed legally will turn to crime. Well, technically that's true, but it's not quite the same kind of crime as Japanese commit, because Japanese don't need visas to work. The incomparable crime being committed here is the non-Japanese finding any work at all in order to survive. For example, item 2, Globe and Mail on Government of Japan's Nasty Immigration and Refugee Policies. I sometimes blog pretty mediocre articles on davito.org by journalists going just through the motions to file stories, without much attempt at bringing new information or angles to the surface. I have an example at davito.org on the blog. In contrast, here is an excellent article that could probably, after a bit of beefing up, be reprinted in an academic journal. I even think the reporter followed quite a few of our leads. Here's an excerpt. Immigration. Japan's unfriendly shores. One culture, one race. Foreigners need not apply. Despite a shrinking population and a shortage of labor, Japan is not eager to accept immigrants or refugees. This is by Jeffrey York, Globe and Mail, Canada, October 9, 2007. Tokyo. In the Turkish village of his birth, Deniz Dogan endured years of discrimination and harassment by police who jailed him twice for his political activities on behalf of the Alevi religious minority. So, he decided to escape to a country that seemed peaceful and tolerant, Japan. 7 years later, he says that he has found less freedom in Japan than in the country he fled. For a time, he had to work illegally to put food on his table. Police stop him to check his documents almost every day. He has suffered deportation threats, interrogations, and almost 20 months in detention. In despair, he even considered suicide. His brother and his family, who fought even longer for the right to live in Japan, finally gave up and applied for refugee status in Canada, where they were quickly accepted. Quote, we had an image of Japan as a very peaceful and democratic country, Mr. Dogan said. It was very shocking to realize that we had less freedom in Japan than in Turkey. We did nothing wrong, except to try to get into this country, yet we were treated as criminals. We felt like insects. End quote. Despite its wealth and democracy, Japan is one of the world's most intolerant regimes for refugees and immigrants. And despite its labor shortages and declining population, the government still shows little interest in allowing more foreigners in. From 1982 to 2004, Japan accepted only 313 refugees, less than 10% of those who applied. Even after its rules were slightly liberalized in 2004, it allowed in only 46 refugees the following year, and last year it accepted only 34 of the 954 applicants. These attitudes have shaped a system of tight restrictions against foreigners who try to enter Japan. One of the latest laws, for example, requires all foreigners to be fingerprinted when they enter the country. Japan's rules on refugee claims are so demanding that it can take more than 10 years for a refugee to win a case. And even then, the government sometimes refuses to obey the court rulings. Hundreds of applicants give up in frustration after years of fruitless effort. And Sadako Ogata says, quote, from the perspective of Japanese officials, the fewer that come, the better. End quote. While they struggle to prove their cases, asylum seekers are often interrogated by police and confined at detention centers, which are prisons in all but name. When not in detention, asylum seekers cannot legally work and are required to live on meager allowances, barely enough for subsistence. In one notorious case in 2005, Japan deported two Kurdish men after the UN Refugee Agency had recognized them as refugees. The UN agency protested the deportations, calling them a violation of Japan's international obligations. Quote, work permits are not given to them, but they have to work to survive, so they work illegally. There's lots more up at davito.org and on the davito.org newsletter October 20th. Have a read, please. Meanwhile, let's look at what happens to some of those refugees. Item 3. Asahi. Unhygienic food in immigration gaijin tank causes hunger strike. One more reason you don't want to be apprehended by the Japanese authorities. In this case, immigration. Bad food. No, I don't mean humdrum food. I mean bad food. Article. It begins. Caterpillars and cockroaches. Foreigners lead hunger strike in immigration detention center. Asahi Shimbun, October 18th, 2007. This is translated by yours truly. Osaka Fu, Ibaraki City. 40 foreigners being detained in the Ministry of Justice West Immigration Detention Center are claiming, quote, there have been instances of stuff being mixed in with the meals provided by the center, such as caterpillars, kemushi, and we cannot safely eat it, end quote. The Asahi learned on October 17th that they carried out a hunger strike on both October 9th and 10th. The immigration center has confirmed that there have been 30 instances from April of inedibles mixed in the food. It has formally demanded their cooks improve the cooking. According to the center, as of October 17th, there are 240 foreigners being detained. They receive 3 meals a day, cooked on site by professionals and provided in detainee cells. However, the company contracted to provide these meals have since April had material mixed in the food, such as hair, cockroaches, and mold. Consequently, the center has taken measures from September to make sure there's no extraneous stuff in the food, but one detainee claims it happened again on October 8th. The center said that they have already cleared the food and refused to exchange it for more. So the next day from breakfast, the detainees went on hunger strike. By breakfast October 10th, an additional 30 people had joined the movement. After the center told them it would thoroughly check the sanitation procedures of the meal preparers, the detainees called off their strike. The center said, quote, we have demanded the meal preparers clean up their act and will keep a sharp eye on them from now on. Full article ends. Quick comment. You know, things have got to be pretty antipathetic when even the inmates have bad food. And food in Japanese prison, from what I've read, is apparently sparse but not all that unhealthy. But then again, this is not a prison. It's an immigration gaijin tank where non-Japanese are held indefinitely and not subject to the same standards, such as exercise, baths outside their cells, and, most importantly, a definite time limit to their incarceration that people who have been formally sentenced to a Japanese prison will have. Now, back to the food. Remember where we are. This is Japan. This is a land of foodies, and it's famous for being a place where it's hard to get a truly bad meal, let alone an unhygienic one. People are really fussy over here, and it shows in the marketplace. No professional in their right mind in the Japanese meal services will let quality slip. It might be the effect of a captive market, literally, meaning no competition and no incentive for quality control. Or it might just be antipathy. Either this detention center's meal preparers are completely shameless people, or they just don't like foreigners and feel no compunction to serve them properly. This is pretty stunning. Stop faffing about and fire the cooks already, immigration. Anyway, it's pretty clear that some people will do anything to avoid getting incarcerated in places like these, sometimes with tragic results. Item 4. Asahi. A non-Japanese dies during police snitch site home ID check. Story begins. Woman falls 9 stories from mansion. Dies. Osaka Nishiku. This is the Asahi Shimbun, October 16, 2007. This is an excerpt. On October 16, 2007, around 9:55 a.m., a woman resident on the 9th floor of an apartment complex thought to be a foreigner was asked by Nishi Prefectural Police for identification in order to ascertain her status of residence. The woman received the police in her genkan, but returned to her room and minutes later fell from her veranda. She died of severe injuries to her entire body. The Nishi police are ascertaining her identity. According to sources, she was apparently an Asian foreigner in her 40s and 50s. At the end of September, Nishi police received an anonymous tip-off that, quote, an illegal foreign woman lives there. So this morning, 4 police officers visited the premises. When they demanded her passport at the genkan, the woman was said to have replied, please wait, and then went back into the apartment. There was no answer after that. Nishi police vice chief Akai Yasohachi said, quote, we don't think there was any problem with the way the demands for identification were carried out. Okay, article ends. This is translated by yours truly. Comment. Now it's not even a matter of police stopping you on the street anymore for ID checks. They're making house calls. This is not an isolated incident. Over the past few months, I have heard many reports from individuals regarding police investigating whole apartment complexes door to door, especially those renting specifically to non-Japanese. It's all part of the dragnet against foreigners in Japan. In this case in Osaka, I doubt there was any foul play involved, and the consensus in the comments section of my blog is that she somehow tried to escape. But here we had the fruits of the anonymous anti-foreigner government of Japan snitch sites, people unwilling to be taken into custody by Japanese police for whatever reason. Given how the Japanese police treat people in their care, it's not difficult to see why. I have links from my site on this. More news if there is any later, but will this develop into a clear case of somebody's got to die before bad policy gets changed? I wish they'd create snitch sites so we can anonymously rat on suspected members of organized crime. Those are the type of people I'd like to see falling from neighborhood balconies. Meanwhile, another case of incarceration which warrants an update. Item 5. Idubor case update. Denied release. Next hearing in 2 months. Okay. The Idubor case, there's background on it. This is a gentleman who was accused of rape and with no material evidence. And I've just heard from his wife that the outcome of his latest court hearing, October 18th, which had the hope of releasing him, did not. Okay. Listeners, I'm sure you can hear this fan in the background. That sound is coming from my computer, and the fan keeps on kicking in every 2 minutes. If I don't just keep on reading and if I keep pausing, then it's going to take me all night to get through this. So my apologies for the fan. I can't seem to do anything about it, so bear with me. I'm going to keep on reading. Okay, continuing. How nice. You know, there's no material evidence of any crime committed, yet the defendant has to languish in jail with deteriorating health for another 2 months. I would suggest people drop by Mr. Idubor's bar in Yokohama and support his wife and business by having a drink. And there's details on how to get there at my blog. Item 6. What to do if you are threatened with eviction? With Nova Incorporated Eikaiwa Debacle, I've been getting quite a few questions from people who are finding out their employer isn't paying their rent for corporate housing, much less their salary. It's getting tough to answer each person individually. I mean, I get dozens of general questions every week. So let me add to the What to Do If artery site for one-stop shopping, and that is www.debito.org/whattodoif.html. No spaces in between. What to do if you are being threatened with eviction from your apartment? Tenants have extremely strong rights in this society, which means that if you signed a contract, you're entitled to stay, even if you haven't paid your rent for a stretch of time. You can even sue and win if your landlord changes his or her mind after a contract is signed and money paid. Stand your ground. You cannot be evicted without a court order. Here's some advice from people in the know. This is courtesy of the Japan Times. 1. With Nova Incorporated deducting rent from your paycheck, but not forwarding it on to your landlord, Nova broke the law. They're in the wrong, not you. Your landlord can complain, but his contract is with Nova. Keep your pay stubs and any receipts that you have. Legally, you've been paying rent. If the landlord changes your locks, removes anything from your apartment, or harasses you without going to court and getting a court order for your eviction, he's in the wrong. He can give you all the letters he wants, but he needs a judge to evict you. Grounds for eviction are normally illegal activity in the apartment or non-payment of agreed rent obligations. This is why you should hang on to your pay stubs, just in case things get ugly and you have to fight your eviction. Item 2, accommodation. This is from Bob Tench, the Nova Union Vice President. Quote, even if the owner, landlord, agency is screaming at you to get out, you don't have to leave. Just keep paying your rent. If the company was supposed to be paying the rent and they haven't, sue the company for fraud or tell the agency, look, the company's supposed to be paying and I've already paid the company. You have a right of residency, and anyone who wanted you to get you out is going to have to get a court order to do it. So you see the crucial thing here, again, is the court order. Referential articles. This is from the Japan Times, Tuesday, September 25th, 2007. Is it all over for Nova? As Eikaiwa Giant plans school closures and amid credit crunch, some fear the worst. You can see a link to it from my blog. And also another article from the Chosun Ilbo, South Korea. Korean woman wins discrimination damages in Japan. This I featured in my previous newsletter. Plus, there's also other extraneous bits of advice regarding union support, unpaid wages, immigration, visas, and employment, redundancies, and unemployment insurance. Again, up at whattodoif.html. Item number 7. Template protest letters re upcoming fingerprint laws. My F-Day for fingerprints, November 20th, is just around the corner. Are you ready to stand in the Gaijin line every time, regardless of how long you've been here, and for what's forecasted to take hours at a time? To have to face finger ink pads at whatnot at any port of entry that's not Narita? Scott Wallace writes the following, quote, I know many have written comments about the new fingerprinting laws for all non-Japanese re-entering Japan's borders, so I had a Japanese friend draw up a letter of protest. Here it is in English and Japanese. For the cost of a stamp and an envelope, I think it's well worth sending it. Even if nothing is done, it's great for our health just to let them know and get it off our chests. You know, nothing ventured, nothing gained, right? I have kept it to one A4 size so that it is read, points out politely why I think the law should be removed or amended, and specifically makes a request. Feel free to amend it as you like. That's downloadable from my blog, of course, October 20, 2007 newsletter. Suggestions on what to do with it. Well, hand it over at the border as you clear passport control. Send it by snail mail or email to the Japan National Tourist Organization, Japan Hotel Association, and make sure you carbon copy the Justice and Immigration and Naikakufu. Also try Hato Bus Company, JAL, ANA, Tokyo and Osaka governments, Ginza, Akihabara Merchants Associations, even JR, Keisei Densetsu, Limousine Bus Companies, all of which will be affected. Tell anyone you please that the fingerprinting biometric system is going to repel both business and leisure travelers, and will ultimately cost Japan foreign exchange and jobs. Another friend writes that the single best potential for protests will be international couples traveling together, where one spouse is Japanese. They won't be able to stand in line and enter together anymore, and that will also require the Japanese partner to cool his or her heels while waiting in the baggage claim area. There's no other place to do it, right? And of course, there is civil disobedience. This is from another friend of a friend. Quote, It's not really common knowledge, but electronic fingerprint readers don't work on about 10% of the population. Something about the grooves being too shallow or something. So they have to have some sort of contingency plan in place, like taking imprints and then scanning them. This costs them money. Lots of money. As in, if anyone had to have manual prints done, the project would go way over budget. I recommend applying super glue to your fingertips just before getting off the plane. Everyone. Or cover your fingers in a thick layer of Vaseline or chewing gum to really mess up the readers. Apologize profusely when they find out, but just let them mess around trying to find out why nobody's prints register on any machines before just saying screw it and letting everybody through. Hey, let's mess with the system, I say. Make it so cost-efficient and so time-consuming that they have to stop. End quote. Of course, I would never advocate messing up their machines like that. Never, ever. But one of the reasons I believe that special permanent residents, i.e. the Zionichi, have been made exempt from this requirement is because there would have been hell to pay. I mean, like there was in the past if they had. So the Japanese government just didn't expect the disorganized Gaijin to protest. I suggest you prove them wrong. And finally, item 8. Forthcoming essays in Japan Times and Metropolis on reinstating fingerprinting and Japanese Government Cabinet Human Rights Survey. Well, you know, it's been a busy time for me, actually, with 5 speeches next week and also 2 essays coming out. On Tuesday, October 23rd, Japan Times community page will publish my 40th article, this time on the awful Human Rights Survey put out every 4 years by the Prime Minister's Cabinet Office, as some indication of popular sentiment towards granting human rights to fellow humans, tentatively including non-Japanese. They fortunately report that more people this time believe that foreigners deserve the same rights as Japanese, after more than a decade of steady decline. But if anybody actually took a closer look at that survey, with its leading questions, biased sampling, and even discriminatory language towards non-Japanese residents, you would wonder why, A, anyone would take it at all seriously, and B, why our government cabinet is so unprofessional and unscientific, especially when the United Nations has long criticized Japan for ever making human rights a matter of popularity polls. Go on, pick up a copy next Tuesday. I even did the cartoon for it. On Friday, October 26th, Metropolis's that last word column will have my 20th article with them, this time on the fingerprint reinstitution I've been talking about so much recently. 850 words on the issue, the history, and more on what you can do about it. Go on, get your copy next Friday. And if you would like me to start writing a regular column for the Japan Times or Metropolis, say once a month, let them know. Now send a quick email to community@japantimes.com or editor@metropolis.co.jp. That's all for today. Thank you for reading and or listening, of course. This is Arudo Debito in Sapporo, Japan. Also, thanks as always to Trans-Pacific Radio for hosting this show. This is the end of the Debito.org newsletter, October 20th, 2007. But of course, we're making a tradition here. Before I sign off, just a little something for you. As I say, I like to sign off every broadcast with a little Duran Duran tune. Here you go. Stars and above, I have 62 of them. I got lots of weeks I can do this. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.